Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie, back on the show this week. Very happy to have him back. It's been a little while. He's a marketing director and publisher at Vertical. It's Ed Chavez. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Zach. How you doing?
I am doing okay. How are you?
I'm well. It's cold as hell out here in New York City. I'm sure you're not missing any of this.
Oh, but, no,
outside of that, been doing all right.
I think it's in the 70s here right now.
Yeah, We're just hovering over zero over here.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like Arctic Vortex every other week, basically.
Oh, God. That's awful.
So I'm actually enjoying it, to be honest. I mean, not to interrupt, but like growing up in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. You know, it was really rare to get exceptionally cold out there, though it would get chilly every now and then, but... Actually seeing, like, regular snowfall and it being, like, shin-deep, you know, it's been a bit of a hoot in that way.
You enjoy the extreme weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't miss that whatsoever. So it's been a little more than a year since we've had you on to talk about Vertical. Actually, probably like a year and a half. And so it's been a while since we've had a chance to catch up. 2013 at this point, we can start there. Like, how was 2013 for Vertical? Last time mm-hmm. we talked, I remember it being a little downbeat. And I'm curious if you saw a rebound in 2013 and just to characterize the year for us. How'd it go?
For us, 2013 was tremendous. I think the last time we talked, we were just starting to financially turn things around. And I think one of the things that came up was, like, you know, we had a few months here and there profitability, and we were just concerning ourselves with, you know, what to do with staff and what to do with, you know, adding new licenses and how that's going to impact the company. And what was amazing about the last year was, we ended up taking some of that and expanding a little bit. I mean, not tremendously. We're, you know, instead of being five of us here, where there's six and a half or so, we've got a part-time editor who comes
in. I was
gonna
say, you got half a person working there?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. we're releasing a lot more content than we were doing before. And what's cool, or what has been cool for the last, I don't know, I guess the last 14, 16 months or so, is that basically we're hitting all of our sales expectations. We're exceeding it most of the time by pretty good margins. Nice. You know, we just got our December numbers in, and, you know, that's a nice amount that we got that I think in previous years it was maybe a third of what we got this month. So and that's actually not uncommon anymore, which is really, really cool. And I think it's kind of indicative of how most of the market is trending right now. The manga market, at least. I think there has been a bit of a correction, a little bit of an adjustment after some of the doldrums that we saw, like 2010, 2011 mm-hmm. or so, when the market just, you know, it just bottomed out, essentially.
Excellent. Well, that's really good news. And once again, you know, following in the wake of the anime industry, that's what happened to the anime industry, too. Like, everyone decided to get a lot smarter about their business decisions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so same thing happened in the anime industry. And so in terms of what happened last year in 2013, like, what were your biggest sellers, like, the biggest hits?
I think it's pretty obvious to people who read manga, or at least follow Vertical, that Gundam the Origin really was a surprise. We came into that title with I have to say that like a lot of weird expectations from not just Japan but other licensors as well. Gundam, that specific release had been released by Viz almost a decade ago, and they were doing something really unique at that time. They were actually doing something pretty close to like a simulpub back then with mm-hmm. their big floppies that they had. And I don't think the market back then was quite as robust or just as aware as we are now. And it didn't necessarily work out. Mm-hmm. But what we ended up doing with that was going about it from a very vertical perspective. So we tried to make it as much of a collector's item as possible, mainly because we've tried that before with some of our Tezuka titles, and we've done a number of omnibus releases in the past, and we do art books and craft books and cookbooks and the like. So we have experience in making gorgeous looking books. So to kind of mitigate some of the risk, we wanted to release something that would be a little bit of a higher price point and something that we could kind of tap into an existing fan base, a rabid fan base, a very knowledgeable fan base. And while I think you and I could both agree that the Gundam fan base is a little fractured in some ways, there just hasn't been enough actual physical media that's been released anytime I guess in the last couple years because of the whole Bandai animation situation here in the States. But unless you were getting figures, model kits, there wasn't too much for people to really latch onto that way. So we really wanted to just go after those specific readers, and Kadogawa and Sunrise were like, if you're going to release this, you're going to have to release all of this. And, we don't care if we're going to give you like a really, really big discount. Just make sure that you release it all, because, Viz wasn't able to finish this. It wasn't finished in France. It was canceled in Italy, and it was canceled in Spain like a couple of months before we acquired the license. So they didn't want to get any more, egg on their face for a property like that. Especially since they've been tossing out rumors about the animation that's still kind of been circling around. But we were more than willing just to take that on and make it our own. And I think it's really worked out. It's gotten to a point where it hasn't been out in the market for a year yet. I think it's been out for like 9 months or so. But we've done like 3 reprintings in the last like 2 months. I mean, that's wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
it's clearly one of our best sellers in the last 2 or 3 years. I think the only thing that can rival it has been Cheese Sweet Home and 5 Centimeters Per Second. But I mean, that's been huge. And then let's see what else. Summer Wars has been really good for us. We kind of knew going in that was going to be a slam dunk. We had really good success with 5 Centimeters Per Second, which has been a perennial seller for us the last 2 years. Like really, really high numbers every week. That's 5 Centimeters. I think has been the reprint like 5 times already, and we're about to go to reprint for both volumes of Summer Wars, even though they just came out in November. So that's pretty cool. From the New World has been doing relatively well so far. And I think that kind of falls in line with a little bit of success we've had with Flowers of Evil, too. I mean, there's those, media connections to both of them. And I don't think either one of them had huge anime exposures, though their fandoms are very passionate. And I think one thing that we were able to really capitalize on both was just make sure that those readerships understood that we were going to take care of those properties and we're going to try to do our best to make it worthwhile for fans of those properties. And people will see, well, it seems as if people have really followed through. So that's been a bit of a change for us. I mean, in the past, we've been doing mainly, you know, classical works or things that are very artsy. And that's not to say that, you know, titles like Tropic of the Sea or some of the Jose works that we're releasing or, you know, even Flowers of Evil don't have their, you know, artistic elements to them. But, you know, we're definitely being a lot smarter about trying to tie in things with modern day media and also have that kind of fold into what the vertical image is as a whole. So it's been fun playing with the catalog that way.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear about the big success of Gundam The Origin, because I know when I think the last time we spoke, that was just about to come out. It hadn't quite come out yet, and you sounded kind of apprehensive about it. You were kind of like, well, I guess we'll see if this works or not.
Yeah.
And so congratulations on that, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that just goes back to what the perception was as a whole. Like, everybody was telling us this is just not going to work out. This is just not going to work out. And I mean, we had a very specific number that we thought, you know, if we hit these figures, not only would it, you know, would it break even, but we'd make a pretty penny. And that's one of the reasons why we specifically went with that that deluxe edition.
Right.
But the fact that people have really come out of the woodwork for that series, and it's, you know, it's going to be 12 volumes, and I hope people continue through the entire run. Really surprised everybody here in the office. Like, we had a good feeling that, you know, we'd get, you know, maybe 10,000 you know, dedicated fans worldwide. And one of the reasons why we made sure to get like a global English license was so we can tap that, like, that core fandom. So we were just really hoping that people who are willing to put down, you know, $50, $60, $120 for a model kit would think about, you know, plopping down $17 on Amazon, you know, after discount for Origin. And, you know, what ended up turning out eventually was, you know, 10,000 wasn't enough. I mean, we ended up selling out of that first printing in like 4 weeks.
Wow.
We were really in a weird position where our distributor was like, what the heck are you guys going to do? You know, they want obviously to get more you know, distribution fees. And we're like, we really don't know if we can keep the costs down if we do small printings. And are there another, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 readers out there that want to pick this up? And we would just see the pre-order numbers. I mean, the reorder numbers just pile up. And we were like, well, eventually we have to do this. So, you know, printed out another run, made a very quiet announcement online because we were, you know, so adamant initially that this was just going to be one and done, and demand just kept on coming. So it's interesting to see. It's not so, this. I mean, this type of fervor, I haven't seen myself firsthand. I've got to see numbers from other publishers before, and then when I was at Publishers Week, I was able to see a lot of data. But to actually witness it firsthand was something that's not cheap either. I mean, these are $30 books. Mm-hmm. It's very surprising, but it's a pleasant surprise, and something that actually gives us a lot of hope. Because to be honest, one of the other factors that we had going into the acquisition of Origin was Barnes & Noble and our distributors, Random House, were like, you know, $30 manga. Who's going to, you know, who in that market space is going to want to put down that much money when they can, you know, they can buy almost four volumes of a Shonen Jump book for that much? Yeah. Right. So it's really gratifying to prove the market wrong in some ways.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it just for that kind of success for a Gundam title in general, it's pretty rare here.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
US. I mean, it's not like that franchise ever took off here, you know?
Yeah, no, and the thing on top of that, too, is, you know, our current CEO, he used to work for Bandai, so, like, here in the States. So, he was one of the factors as to why we ended up acquiring it, but it came to a big surprise, too. Like, he was a little apprehensive to see if, you know, we could put out 20,000-30,000 units of it initially, but I mean, if that's what the market calls for, we're gonna go with it. So,
excellent. Well, any experiments you tried in 2013 that worked out or didn't work out?
I think one thing that's been really interesting for us has been a just a manga movement that we've been doing. So over the last year or so, and it actually started in 2002 when we brought over 2012 when we brought over Moyoko Ano to premiere our book Sakuran to New York Comic Con, and you know, that did really well. But it was also a unique book, partially in color. So it also had that, like, collector's factor to it. But last year, we started about every season to release, like, a women's title. We did a re-release of Paradise Kiss, and we released this kind of alternative Jose title that's a little erotic called Tsubora. Mm-hmm. Last couple of months, we've been releasing works by Kyoko Kazaki, and she's kind of considered to be like the mother of Jose. She was the mentor to Moyoko Ano and to Yazawa Ai, the artist who did Nana and Paradise Kiss. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's been really interesting because critical response has been great. Its sales have been really mixed though, and I guess that's what we should. You know, we kind of expected going into it, but what is a little funny is that the things that are a little more obscure, things that haven't necessarily been even requested in some cases, are doing a lot better than what is, you know, what we're seeing asked for in our surveys and the like. So a title like Utsubora, which released over the summer, has done remarkably well, has done a lot better than most of our 18 titles that we've done in the past, outside of, say, Pipochu. And then between Pink and Helter Skelter by Okazaki, even though there's a movie for Helter Skelter, and even though it's a more current comic, and it's won awards more recently, Pink is just... It was released like 4 months later, but its numbers have caught up and passed it very quickly. And it wasn't, I won't say that it was a title that a lot of people were requesting. More people were asking for Helter Skelter and another one of her works called River's Edge, which we're thinking about. But I don't know. I guess it's just when it comes to things that are a little off the beaten path, and you know, the way that those titles converge with the vertical brand, I think people are more willing to take a chance on, like, works that no one's ever heard of. And it's a pattern we've seen in the past before, too, so it's not all that shocking, but you know, I was kind of hoping to see both of those Okazaki books just kind of move along in the same way. Their themes are not exactly the same, but they both have very feminist beats to them. So, but yeah, just to know that people are willing to really experiment along with this, I think has been pretty cool. You know, one project that hasn't necessarily worked for us all that well, though. Even that is a little. I'm a little uncertain about how best to describe why it doesn't work has been our attempts to release shonen titles, and you know, we tried doing things like GTO in the past, and a couple other properties. And it's interesting. It's interesting to see that in retail, those things don't quite get the interest from vendors when we present them. So when we go up to Amazon or go talk to Barnes & Noble, they're kind of like, oh, another shonen title. We get enough of this from Viz or Yen Press. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, if we go to a con and we put out GTO or something like Hero Man onto a table, those things are gobbled up immediately. So it's something that really makes me wonder about how best to approach that side of the market, how best to approach the retail side of the market, because it's clear that there are fans of these works and that these people want this content. But obviously, if you go to a major chain like Barnes & Noble, the book buyer there isn't going to be familiar with manga, right? They're not going to know GTO from Naruto. Mm-hmm. Outside of Naruto's numbers are way better. Mm-hmm. But how to ensure or at least give them enough confidence that, hey, yeah, sure, this book isn't going to sell 50,000 units in the first year, but 10K isn't bad, right? Especially nowadays, just when publishing as a whole is kind of taking a step back. And there isn't as much manga to bloat up or just to compete within those bookshelves anymore. I think there should be a little more willingness to keep things on shelves for a little longer. But at the same time, we turn around and, as I said earlier, with Flowers of Evil or From the New World, and those are obviously shonen titles. They're just not your standard shonen fare. It's not another battle manga. It's not a weird, etchy, romance comedy. They're willing to take that on, and those titles are doing great. So it's I think I brought this up before with you guys. It's kind of a weird situation that have not only readers kind of pigeonhole us and what they want from us, but also to convince vendors the same too, that we're willing to and we want to try new things has been a bit of a challenge. And that also extended even more so to our shoujo releases that we've done. So those have been complete flops from the beginning. Like our only shoujo title that's ever done marginally well has been Tutera. Maybe Princess Knight. But I think Princess Knight was mainly the Princess Knight dude.
Right. Sure. Yeah, right. Hey. Well, that kind of sucks that, basically people are saying, no, we only want this from you.
Yeah. I've kind of gotten used to that to an extent, which is why we keep on trying to do more and more sane and just try to, experiment with other elements of manga as a whole. So we're not shy about releasing 18 up titles we released that Satoshi Kon book, which isn't very modern and possibly isn't indicative of what he ended up doing later. But I think it was very important to us, and it was a nice little homage. So those things work. Those things really work for us, and people, and not just customers are into that, but vendors are stoked about those things too. So I don't know. It's trying to find those specific works, like I said, like a Gundam or like a Flowers of Evil that can straddle both lines of these are very vertical works and at the same time are very market friendly works that can pretty much carry a label too. to a point.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing, though, for the fans to be like, yeah, you know, this doesn't really seem like a vertical title. Or if you do decide to, you know, try something new, they're kind of like, eh, well, you know, I don't expect that from you, so therefore, you know, I'm going to be kind of down on it. It's one thing to hear that from the fans. It's another thing to hear that from the retailers.
Yeah.
Who are like, well, I don't know if we want this from you. It's like, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. But, I mean, I've got to say, that's pretty common. I mean, and not just when it comes to, you know, comics, of course. It's even more competitive when you get into prose. So, you know, we do novels, right? And there is no, like, or at least very few bookstores have, like, an international prose section. So if we release another book from the creator of The Ring, it's not going to go to, like, you know, oh, these are only Japanese novels. It's going to go into the horror section, where we have to compete with all those other horror books. Or if we release a mystery novel, it's going to go into the mystery section. And, I mean, it's gotten to the point even on that side where we're basically only doing, like, those two genres, occasionally, you know, dipping our toe into sci-fi because we've done okay with that as well. But that's what publishing retail is like. It's really, really specialized. I guess that's when you look into publishing, I guess that's why there's so many of the smaller publishing houses that are like out, like vertical size, that are almost always micro-focused on just one thing. Like, down the street from us is, they're good friends of ours, it's Soho Press. That's all they do. They just do mysteries. And they've got, like, two imprints, you know, one that does just, you know, their regular mysteries, and then there's another one, Soho Crime, which is just, like, hard-boiled crime fiction. And, you know, that's basically what Random House wants them to do, and that's what BNN and the like appreciates from them, because it's, you know, they don't have to deviate. They don't have to have different vendors show up. I mean, different sales reps show up to buyers, show up to meetings at all. It's just one guy. You talk to him for 45 minutes, an hour, and you're done. You see him again in 3 months. But in our case, it's like, here's our catalog. And you've got all these different imprints, kind of. All these other things that we do, like cookbooks and craft books and shit like that. So, you know, we never wanted to be pigeonholed, but, you know, we just have to kind of figure out a way best to satisfy, like, all of those demands, even as unreasonable as they may be.
All right. Well, so if that was 2013, then what are you looking at? What are we looking forward to for this year?
Man, well, first of all, I think I'm looking forward to more of our works being adapted into anime properties. So one thing that we've been pretty stoked about has been Knights of Cydonia, which we've been releasing for the last couple of months or so. And that's going to be brought out into broadcast, I think, in April or May. We've been actually working a bit with Starchild and Polygon about the production for that for a little while now, and promotion since, like, Anime Expo. So we're really looking forward to see how that's going to take off, because there are a number of little unique details that are going along with that, like the dubbing and distribution through Netflix. So being involved from, like, a very early part of production in that way, even though it's our part is really small, we're really curious over here to see how that will translate to sales, because when we've seen other works of ours go through the process as we're releasing the manga, let's say, like, in the case of Flowers of Evil, or... Yeah, I think most people who are listening to this know that we're sister companies with Kodansha Comics, and, you know, the way we got to experience how Attack on Titan blew up for them after the anime came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're really curious to see what's going to pan out with Cydonia. It's a different type of work, at least from what you normally see from us. It's a pretty different type of sci-fi tale, a little closer to Robotech in some ways, with the romance element, and definitely space opera points. But at the same time, I think that would really translate to animation. Maybe not so much the 3D, but I'm also looking forward to seeing how that works out. So that's like our biggest project right now. After that, I think it would be Card Fight Vanguard, which kind of goes back to, you know, shonen titles for us haven't necessarily all worked out, and this skews pretty dang young for us, but in this case, we got a pretty good deal from Bushiroad, and they've been really, really helpful. We're going to try to do some pretty radical things, at least for us, with this title. So, like, every volume's going to get a trading card pack in, and volume one is going to come with a starter deck. We're really curious. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure if it's if there is a little bit of trepidation there, but we really want to see how the market would react to us taking on a property like this, because it is so different from what we normally do, and it's almost to the point where I kind of would love to have like another imprint name or something, just to kind of take off the vertical brand from it, so it'd be entirely fresh and people will look at it from a different set of eyes that way. But you know, we're working really closely with Bushi on this, so hopefully like we're coordinating when to inform people about the cards and everything like that. They're giving us a lot of materials to put into the books that are very current. So hopefully they'll be able to help out a lot with that. They do a lot of tournaments across the country and a lot of marketing. So I think it's going to be a lot of give and take there. And knowing that they have a U.S. branch and that I know most of those people, because a good chunk of them are from Broccoli, they're generally all good people over there. I think it's going to be a really fun project. I don't know where it's going to go, but that should be pretty fun. And then, actually, there's also a title that I would like to possibly announce with you, if you don't mind. We're later this fall. We have a title from Takuma Morishige called My Neighbor Seki, which is the anime, actually the manga that the anime Seki-kun, that Crunchyroll is currently streaming, is based on. It's a collection of short little gags that revolve around a high school slacker or idiot savant named Seki, and the project that he does on his school desk. They can be pretty intricate at times. As in one chapter, he ends up creating a small miniature golf course on his desk. And yet the only person who seems to know about this is the girl that sits next to him in class. The rest of the world is completely oblivious, which adds to a little bit of humor. We've been working on this project for about like 2.5 years now. Initially, we were actually thinking about releasing this as just a collection of the best stories of Seki-kun. The property in Japan kind of took on a life of its own over the last year or so, since they did additional marketing for it, like releasing an OVA and some YouTube videos. So now I think it's in its fifth or sixth volume over there. And we're going to be releasing a new volume every 2 months or so, starting the end of 2014. This is another bit of a stretch for us. We don't tend to do comedies too much, specifically like visual gag comics. But it really struck a nerve with our editor-in-chief, Yanni, who loves this series to death. And on top of that, there's like a bunch of weird little side stories to the author, and we're kind of working on seeing if we can do some more with him and maybe some of his family members. So it should be a pretty good, pretty cool project, I think. Expect to see a lot more promotion of that as the summer comes along and we're able to get some materials from Media Factory on that.
Cool. Well, but, go ahead. The show has been like really well received.
Oh, cool. I'm always a little curious about that type of thing because short, like 10-minute episodes are hit or miss sometimes. So, and I don't watch as much anime as I used to because it's just kind of buried in licensing over here. But it's good. It's cool to hear that the people are reacting well to it so far.
So yeah, did real well. And a lot of people were talking about they thought it was really funny. So yeah, definitely some heat coming off the show. So yeah, good pickup. We'll make sure to announce that obviously in the show notes and everything like that. Excellent. Okay. Well, that's exciting. What's your convention schedule like?
Insane. Last year, I think I went to 14 conventions and. I basically just do that all by myself, which is torture. But this year is going to be almost the same. It's going to be 14 to 16. I go to my first two in February, and then I've got another two in March. And starting May is what I call like the March of Death, where I do a con almost every week until August. The end of August until Otakon. But what changes this year is the World Cup. So yeah. I'll be out in Brazil with our buddy Mike Toole and maybe Bamboo if she's able to get her tickets. And that's going to be, for me, is only going to be a 10-day break. I think Toole's out there for a whole month.
Yeah.
But yeah, that should be fun. But we're gonna hit most of the big shows. Always going to San Diego Comic Con. Always going to New York Comic Con. AX. We're trying to see if we can maybe even bring a guest to AX this year.
Cool.
We do have a couple of guests planned for this year, but everything's still in negotiations with those cons and the artist agents. But that's something we do a lot of. So we hope to keep the type of thing running. Most of the shows tend to be on the East Coast, so like Anime Week in Atlanta, and Anime Boston, and Anime Next. Looks like we're going to go back to Toronto twice this year for Anime North and for TCAF. And further expansion into the Midwest, damn it, because I haven't hit all those states yet, personally. So. If I have to go out there and stand on my feet for like 8-hour shifts in the dealer's room, trying to strain a smile after 3 days there, I'm going to fucking enjoy those trips and and take in as much local food and booze as possible. So, we'll possibly be going back to Texas a bit and. I think we're going back to ASIN this year, so that should be fun.
Well, we should let the Nebraska Comic Festival know you're coming.
Oh, damn. Yeah, definitely. I need to hit Omaha, and, if there's anything in Des Moines, Iowa, Bismarck, Montana, email me. Damn it. Fuck. I need to... This is a freaking like rally stamp competition by myself. Just hit every single state.
Good luck with that. Okay. Well, that's great. It's great to hear that things are going better and license announcements exciting. And let's go ahead and get to your Twitter questions here.
All right.
Ellie Mouse asks, if money was no object, what series would you most like to publish?
Oh shit. sorry. Man, questions like that are always a little tricky because like money isn't always the biggest problem. You know, sometimes you just have authors or exclusivity issues. Like, well, if someone made the playing field just completely even,
yeah,
I would possibly say, and this would just be total vanity project, and I don't think it's going to sell, but I would possibly say Urusei Yatsura, mm-hmm. Mainly because that is my favorite manga of all time.
Right.
It is insane. It is completely episodic, but it is also extremely influential, and it's a title that I was almost literally raised on. Mm-hmm. I would also like to release Devilman. I mean, God, I've been trying to work on that since I joined this company, and it just hasn't happened. Something that's a little more reasonable, but also has stipulations would be pat labor. I think the timing would be great for that, and release it in another gorgeous deluxe collection, as Japan has done a couple of times already, would be pretty cool. And the manga for that is actually really damn good. It's by the guy who did Birdie the Mighty, and I think the Viz release was just way too ahead of its time. It's more like a seinen title than a shonen title, and back then, anything that wasn't Ranma wasn't selling, so, or Dragon Ball. So I think the market right now is at a place where a work like Palabra could do all right. I won't say it'll be gangbusters, but if it's treated well enough, I think it can do relatively well.
All right. Passion Tentacle asks, what do Crunchyroll simulpubs mean for licensing? Could titles like Inside Mari still be picked up for physical release?
Obviously, this is going to change publisher to publisher, but for us, if a work has been previously acquired by another pub, and in this case, Crunchy is not your traditional publisher; they're a digital publisher, but we still treat them as a pub, so that falls into like a realm that we just look at it as a license rescue and or a sub licensing agreement. We generally aren't gonna prioritize those type of works, and that doesn't mean that in the case of Inside Mari, we wanted that license. It's really early in that series's run. So possibly we would have liked to have waited until there were, three or four volumes of that so we could release them every other month or so. But we're no longer considering that work. Now, at the same time, I mentioned this earlier, we're really close to Kodansha, so we do know how Crunchy works to an extent, and they kind of collaborated to work on that project together. And we were a part of some of those meetings. So is there a possibility that vertical licenses could pop up on Crunchyroll at some time? Just like Kodansha comics have popped up on Crunchyroll? Yes. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in the not too distant future with some of our bigger acquisitions that we make in the future. And that's just because we're very cognizant of the digital market. And we also want to experiment with giving readers opportunities to sample books legally. While we do ebooks right now, we generally only, in regards to previews of our books, only put up maybe a chapter or two at the most of maybe volume one in a series when we do get permission to put up previews. So you're working with Crunchyroll, and the fact that they keep up chapters until they're collected for a graphic novel, I think that's a pretty good way to, or opportunity for fans to really get into a title see if they want to invest full time into a series, and then turn around to maybe pick up either earlier volumes of the series or just collect the properties that they enjoy the most. So. Yeah, just I think the biggest thing for us and why we wouldn't acquire something that someone else had already worked on is from what we've seen so far, at least from a physical perspective, a lot of hand-me-downs or a lot of rescues don't always do quite as well for print. I'm not necessarily sure if that's the case for everybody. But I do get access to Nielsen book scan numbers, and most of the time, those things don't vary all that much. I think the Yotsuba is an exception, but we generally try to stay away from rescues unless it's a very special case, or if the deal is that we get in the licensing agreement. Is that good, or that we can't say no? So, I think we're going to generally avoid such things.
All right. Okay. Chiodori asks, have sales of Gundam the Origin provided adequate enough? Have they been adequate enough to consider licensing other Gundam manga or light novels? Mm.
Yeah, we get this question a lot.
Sure you do.
Yeah, yes, and definitely. We're actually in process right now of acquiring another Gundam property. I can't say what that is right now because the contract hasn't been signed. But we're definitely working on that right now. We're going through a lot of the existing Gundam catalog. We are in this case looking at previously released works, and once again, this is like a special case. We're not going to look at every single Gundam title that's been published in English, but some of them may make sense to re-release again. Origin itself is a rescue, but what we're going to focus on are titles that are going to be in a similar vein to what we did with Origin. So if it is a work that has a lot of additional materials that we can take advantage of and exploit in a positive way for marketing and for for a better overall package that the customer can get, we'd definitely be interested in things like that. It also has to be financially worthwhile for us. So just because this one Gundam title has done extremely well doesn't mean that every other one will. So pardon me, sorry. I don't think we'll be looking at any novels anytime soon. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that it's not possible if the right work were to be available. It might, but we're mainly going to focus on comics, or at least visual material. So, there are a ton of comics. Like Kadogawa has like an entire imprint. They had a whole magazine, Gundam Ace, devoted to this stuff. So there are plenty of ways, plenty of directions that we can go with that, whether it'll be humorous or a little more hard-boiled or just retellings like Origin. We've got a bit of a treasure trove to go through. So that's really cool. But yeah, you'll possibly hear more from us about Gundam by this summer. I think maybe AX or San Diego or Otakon around then.
Okay. All right. Buster Blader asks, There's an increasing amount of Jose titles in your catalog. Mm. Is Vertical trying to establish itself as an outlet for such works?
Definitely. You know, when I first started working at Vertical, I wanted to basically take away the mantle of seinen publisher, premier seinen publisher, from Carl Horn's hands at Dark Horse. And I think we've been relatively successful in that regard. So now that we've done that, we're now going to put down our flag and claim this territory that is North America and English manga, English reading manga, for a Vertical Jose space. And as I said before, it's early in its process, and we've got a lot to look at. I mean, it's a pretty broad category within manga. We really have to look at it very carefully and how best to approach it. But right now, we've done all right. And I think with our next Fumiyoshi Naga work, even though it's technically seinen, Fumi has a lot of female readers. I think we're going to further expand on that and continue to try to do a new women's comic. Yeah, I would say every season or so from here on out until the market says no. But just don't expect there to be like this flood of like Harlequin comics from us. That's not our style, and I don't think I don't think BNN wants that, and I don't think most of our readers are looking for that. So we'll look for titles that are going to work for us, and hopefully we'll surprise a few readers along the way.
Okay. Tom Asnabel asks, and I think this will be our last question here.
Okay.
What level of oversight does Bandai and Sunrise have over the release of Gundam the Origin?
Oh, God. cool question. okay. The reason that I kind of I feel kind of icky when this topic comes up is initially when we acquired that work. All right, Gundam. Kadogawa and Sunrise were just like, just don't cancel this. That's all we ask. And we had quite a bit of freedom with this title. Yeah, we had to get approvals for covers because Kadogawa in Japan never expected anybody to license the hardcover edition. Mm. So they didn't have any materials for the hardcover edition. So they didn't have any covers. They'd never gone to reprint in Japan either. So they would just, They literally sent us just a PDF of the cover, which was useless because it's textured and the Japanese edition has gold leaf on it, and it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So we had to build one our own from scratch, and that had to go all the way up the chain to Yas himself, the original character designer and the author of the book, and he approved the front covers for all 11 volumes around the time we started production of volume one. So things for the first couple of volumes, super smooth, no problems at all. Pretty much anything we asked for was just okay with Japan. And we didn't do any radical changes at all. We kept in all of the extras and the like. Even asked for some more, and they were just more than willing to help out. And then they started seeing sales figures because royalty season came along. We pay out royalties twice a year. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, then a lot changed. They started to be very, very picky about things to the point where they were finally paying attention to our copyright pages, and they were like, no, hold on a second. We want things to be written up in very specific ways, and we have to credit like all these other people who are not like listed. And like, and we're like, why are you guys paying attention to this now? Like, all these people were involved in these other books before. Yeah, a lot of, you know, music rights. There's a bunch of songs that are in the books as well, and it just became increasingly micromanaged. It's not entirely a bad thing. It's interesting to know the stuff is actually going up the chain, because in some of these cases, and I know this from just firsthand experience. Because I'm involved in the actual approval process, or at least getting approvals. Sometimes the people who sign off on these things are just people in rights departments or editors. It never goes, you know, it might never get to an author. So to know and to get like letters from Yaz himself to us has been really interesting. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's completely had to change our production schedule. And it's like, it's gotten to the point where we used to have like a 2-month window to make a volume of Gundam. I think we did that for like the first two. But now that we're through volume 6, this last one, which we sent up to the printer on Tuesday, I think the whole process for that was about 4.5 months. And it was mainly just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And like making adjustments to the spine art, which they never cared about before. And they're asking, you know, why can't you have Char on every cover? And it's, we're like, because people love Char. That's the only character people pay attention to. And we're like, what are you talking about? This cover's, this book's subtitle is a Rambo Wall. Why can't he be on the cover? It's just a lot of in some ways conflicting ideals of how to best present the property to, you know, this domestic market, instead of trying to convince them that, hey, you know, Gundam, yeah, it's sure, it's a global brand, but it's not universally seen the same way. So, most of the issues that come along with that, have just been, you know, really insignificant for the most part. They have no issues with our translation. They did provide us a style guide, so we pretty much work with that. And as I said, they approved the covers in advance. So it's mainly working with them to get everything closer to what they would like, while not making it seem redundant at the same time. It's a funny experience.
Yeah, I'm sure you find it hilarious during certain months.
Yes, definitely. And the irony is that, like, we're also dealing with two different companies at the same time. So, you know, initially, I think the only people who were looking at it were Kadogawa and, Sunrise had to sign off on all the contracts. but once they got up to Sunrise, it's a completely different type of attitude. It's a lot more open in some ways, but at the same time, it's also a little more detail oriented. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. But it was funny, and not in a funny ha-ha way, but it's a little weird to see what their expectations were and what they would obsess over, because certain things are just really, really bullshitty. And I hope they're not listening to this, because I love you all over at Sunrise. But I kind of wish they would lay off a little bit.
Hey, look, it's really important that it's a little filled in dot
yes, that we had that conversation very early. The Sotsu sunrise situation, which if you know anything about Gundam or work with Bandai at all, that's supposed to be a dot. That's not a dash, or and definitely not a hyphen. That's a dot. And it's not a period. and they want to make sure that Sotsu is capitalized. Mm-hmm. Damn it! Because if it's not, then just send it back.
Yep. Those copyright lines. Every time I've ever had to deal with anything like that, that was item number one, the most important, and the formatting had to be precise.
Yes. And the irony, it's like it's in the contract, and that's not how they want it. You know, hey. Whatever.
Whatever you want, guys.
It doesn't, it takes our graphic designer like 5 minutes to do, but, the approval is like a 3 or 4 day wait.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know how it goes. They've got their way of doing things.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that wraps us up. Ed, great to have you back on the show. Thanks for coming on and filling us in on the last year, and hopefully we won't wait another year to have you back on.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me, man. And most likely I'll run into you on the con scene at some point.
Yeah, let's get a drink. During convention season, I am sure you will.
Yep.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Ed for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a little review. We'd really appreciate it. And we will see you all next week.